Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschool father of five, raising our kids out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Adam McManus in studio, homeschool father of three, and he comes to us from San Antonio, where you guys faced, well, Arctic conditions in San Antonio.
Very cold. We lost electricity for 2 days. Thankfully, our dear friends Will and Glenna Pierce put us up for those nights, and we were able to weather the storm, stay warm, and I was able to record and send the Worldview in 5 minutes from their home.
Yeah, just barely. Just barely. Mm-hmm. So you've been shoveling snow in San Antonio.
Very strange. Five inches.
You guys went down to, what, 0 degrees? That's lower than usual. That's like a once-in-a-hundred-year kind of event, isn't it?
Or at least every half century. It was pretty unusual. There were nearly 4 million Texans without electricity for days, 300,000 of them here in San Antonio.
Wow. Well, today we're coming back to a full-orbed attack on Christian faith and religious liberties in this country. And this thing's been a long time coming. We're going to talk about the Equality Act on this edition. Adam is, of course, host of The Worldview in 5 Minutes. He stays up to date on these political issues constantly. But historically speaking, American Christians have been somewhat protected from the onslaught of persecution on the hands of homosexuals, the neuronic agenda in which homosexuality, homosexual marriage is the first element of that. And then Nero went on to persecute Christians, and that's the agenda. That's what happens.
Fascinating comparison.
In this onslaught on Christians in our day. Now, attempts to protect Christians from homosexuals began in the 1990s with RFRA. That was the Religious Freedom Protection Act. A business could refuse service to somebody and claim that their freedom of religion was violated if the person's action or refusal to act is motivated by a religious belief or a sincerely held religious belief. And that was tossed up by the Congress in the 1990s, and then several states approved RFRA. And Colorado actually attempted an amendment, Amendment 2, which allowed for no special rights for homosexuals. And as I recall, that referendum passed in 1992, but the U.S. Supreme Court tossed it out in 1994-ish. And then Obergefell, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court approved of homosexual marriage for the first time in 6,000 years of world history, in which national governments, including the U.S. government, U.S. Supreme Court, approved of a redefinition of marriage for the first time in 6,000 years of world history. So this kind of cosmic rebellion against the institution that God put in place at the creation is certainly something worth reporting on from time to time. Also, Bostock, that was the decision the U.S. Supreme Court came down with last year, and that was a landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision in which the court held that Title VII would be applied to gay and transgender employees. And that, of course, was on the heels of a case in which a Christian-owned funeral parlor did not want to advertise transgenderism as part of their business. But by the mandate of the U.S. Supreme Court, that has been pressed on every business in America, or may soon be pressed upon every business in America. And what I think is important is that came down on a 6-3 decision, with Gorsuch and Roberts taking the wrong position on that decision. That was Bostock last year.
Unbelievable.
All right, so Obergefell and Bostock decisions basically changed the game for Christians,
yes,
in the Western world. And so there is now no protection for Christian businessmen. Maybe some protection left for churches, but not so much for Christian businessmen in the Western world for the first time in, well, roughly 2,000 years. Well, I'll make more like 1,700 years of world history. Christians in the Western world are now subject to massive persecution at the hands of homosexuals. So that's where we are right now.
Yikes.
And we're going to talk about the Equality Act in just a moment, but these are tough times for Christians, Adam.
Indeed, they sure are. For those that are not familiar with that Bostock Supreme Court case, there was a gentleman who had been working for, I think, at least 5 to 7 years at the funeral parlor in the Detroit, Michigan area, and lo and behold, he got the crazy idea that he was a woman, even though he's a man. And God made him to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started presenting himself as a woman with the makeup, with the women's clothing, etc. And I don't know if he went through various surgeries. He certainly was taking estrogen. The Christian funeral parlor said, no thanks. We hired you as a man. We want you to still present yourself as a man because everyone can see you're clearly a man, not a woman. You can just find a job elsewhere if you'd like to do that. We're not interested. And so then he sued the funeral parlor for quote unquote discrimination, even though they should have every right to hire and fire whomever they please, especially when it is at such a crucial, vulnerable moment in people's lives when they're burying their dead loved ones. You know, inject the crazy sexual politics of America, and that equation is the last thing any decent funeral home would want to allow.
Well, these kind of moral atrocities and abominations were something that you saw, you know, 2,000 years ago with Nero and two or three others of the most wretched and infamous Roman Caesars. So, yeah, while the Roman Empire was imploding on itself, there were, you know, a number of tyrants that exhibited some of the most strange and abominable sexual proclivities. And now these, of course, have gone mainstream in America and are imposed on Christian businesses and possibly even colleges and churches. We're going to talk about the Equality Act next on The Generations broadcast. Stay tuned.
Attention, homeschool parents. Here at Generations, we know that finding literature curriculum that engages your children's minds and helps them develop a strong Christian worldview can be an overwhelming task. That's why we've developed a Christian discipleship-focused literature curriculum that's centered around the most important work of literature ever written, the Word of God. Not only do our Bible-centric courses seek to place Christ at the head of literature studies, but they will also teach your children how to analyze all literature from a Christian perspective, enabling them to be more than conquerors in today's battle of worldviews. By introducing them to the essential stories of the faith, along with the written works of history's best Christian authors, our literature curriculum provides the bedrock for a firm foundation of faith in the hearts of your children. So, get started today with Generations Christian Discipleship Curriculum and watch your children embark on an incredible journey towards strengthening their faith and discovering the greatest Christian stories ever told. You can learn more and browse our selection of carefully curated works at generations.org/curriculum. That's generations.org/curriculum.
And we're back on The Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. Adam McManus, our host on theworldview.com, with me as well. Today, the Equality Act is back on the table in Congress. It was around in 2019. It's back in 2021. The Equality Act is now being sponsored by Representative David Cicilline, Democrat from Rhode Island, and on the Senate side, supported by Senator Jeff Merkley from Oregon. So now it's back on the table. It was sponsored earlier by almost every Democrat senator and by Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine. Well, this time, it's interesting. This is an interesting twist. At this point, they got 49 senators. Joe Manchin is not on board. So 49 senators co-sponsoring the bill, which means the commitment of the Democrats is pretty much universal. It's unanimous, except for Joe Manchin, except for Susan Collins this time. It's interesting. I just did a little research on Susan Collins. I was thinking Susan Collins may be the point at which this bill comes through. But she sponsored the bill in the 2019 session, but the Human Rights Campaign came out against her in the 2020 election, of all things.
That's the homosexual group.
Yeah, that's the homosexual group. So, you know, her friends turned on her. You know, here she was, the Republican, offering something, you know, to the Human Rights Campaign by co-sponsoring the Equality Act in 2019. Well, she comes back in 2021, says, I'm not sponsoring this year. Well, why aren't you sponsoring? The Washington Blade did an interview with her, and she said, well, hey, guys, unfortunately, the commitments that were made to me were not given last year. That's all she said. She didn't talk about the Human Rights Campaign, but everybody knows what she's saying. She's saying, you guys didn't butter the bread on the other side. So I'm not as excited about supporting you guys in 2021. Isn't it interesting how the wicked can come against each other, and there's no honor between thieves, as you know, the expression goes, but at the same time, realize that, you know what, the heart of the king, the heart of the senators are in the hands of God. He turns it whithersoever he wills. And, you know, it's there's always that Joe Manchin. There's always that human rights campaign that turned on Susan Collins. There's always that little worm in the gourd that just undermines the whole deal. You know, so.
And by the way, the Washington Blade is the homosexual newspaper of record, not only of Washington, D.C., but really the country and certainly in the political world. So for her to reveal her hand about why she was not among the Democrats who are going to sponsor it, being the lone Republican to sponsor it, to reveal why is quite telling and, I thought, rather forthright of her.
This is not a shoo-in for the Democrats. You know, they were hoping that they could come back with force and fury in the 2021 session, but friends, God is in control. Jesus is on the throne. And it's going to be hard for them to set themselves against the Lord and against his anointed and get away with it. How does that psalm go? He that sits in the heavens shall laugh, the Lord shall have them in derision. So there's that little piece that they forget about. But Joe Manchin is not going to co-sponsor. And on top of that, you know, the other thing is they've got to get past the filibuster. And Joe Manchin is standing on the filibuster. He's saying, guys, we're retaining the filibuster for now. So Joe Manchin from somewhat conservative West Virginia is acting somewhat the conservative, and he is a bit of the worm in the gourd for the Democrats this time around.
Well, let's talk about the filibuster for those that are not politically. The reason why there's a concern about a Republican filibuster is because of the requirement in the United States Senate with 100 senators for there to be a 60-vote threshold to advance legislation. If they do not have the 60-vote threshold, the Inequality Act, as I like to call it, cannot advance.
Okay.
So therefore, there is talk about scuttling, deep-sixing the supermajority requirement and only requiring there to be a majority vote. They've got the 49 Democrat senators who've already co-sponsored the Inequality Act. They obviously have Kamala Harris, the vice president, if there is indeed a tie, if they can somehow convince Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine, to join them, which seems unlikely. But the other aspect of this that's interesting is you mentioned that Joe Manchin opposes deep-sixing the 60-vote requirement rule to advance this legislation or any other. There's another senator named Kyrsten Sinema, a Democrat from Arizona. And from all accounts, everything I've read, she is a professed bisexual. So the fact that she comes from a conservative-leaning state of Arizona reveals why she probably is not comfortable in light of her constituents' interests and concern in deep-sixing the majority rule. So that's another wrinkle. I would urge, Kevin, all of our listeners across America in particular to dial the number for Joe Manchin in Washington, D.C., and maybe even in Charleston, West Virginia, and ask him to stand strong against the so-called Equality Act. The number to call in D.C. is 202-224-3954. That's 202-224-3954. And the Charleston number is 304-342-5855. That's 304-342-5855.
Well, at this point, the American Christian population does not have the President of the United States on their side. They do not have the U.S. Supreme Court on their side. Remember that the Bostock decision went 6-3, and at this point, with the addition of a more conservative Supreme Court justice, we've got a 5-4. We're losing at a 5-4 at this point on anything relating to homosexuality or the protection of religious freedoms for Christians who have a conscience against these kinds of things.
Yes.
So you don't have the president on your side. You don't have the U.S. Supreme Court on your side. You don't have the House of Representatives on your side. And you don't have the U.S. Senate on your side, except maybe for Susan Collins or Joe Manchin. So, you know, at this point, I think we just need to continue to pray. I think at this point, we need to realize that the odds are against us on this one. Now the filibuster, of course. So it's going to be tough. This is going to be an uphill battle for the left, but now you've got the squishy Republicans who are going for the other compromise, the Utah compromise. We've talked about this many, many times, but the Fairness for All but Jack Phillips bill. We call it the Fairness for All but Jack Phillips.
Now, that's the Christian, you know,
Chris
Denver
Stewart's
Baker
representative from Utah doesn't call it that. He calls it the Fairness for All bill, but we call it the Fairness for All except for Jack Phillips bill.
Who've refused to participate in homosexual marriage ceremonies by making cakes, filming the video, or taking the pictures of these events because they violate their deeply held religious views.
And Jack Phillips represents all of the Christian businessmen and Christian bakers, the photographers, and the candlestick makers across the country. And that's a lot. So, you know, but this is the compromise. So, you know, you've got this bill that Chris Stewart from Utah wants to present. Now, it was supported initially by the Mormon Church, so that's why it's called the Utah Compromise, also endorsed by the CCCU, the Coalition of Christian Colleges and Universities.
Right.
They came right behind this, and of course, we've criticized that decision for at least the last 2 years of this broadcast, only because it's the Fairness for All except for Jack Phillips bill. It's just not right, as we see it, to persecute Christian businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, we would love to see churches and colleges and Christian schools exempted from persecution. But at the same time, do you really want to throw your Christian businessmen under the bus in the process? I don't think so. And so we keep coming back to this issue again and again. Now, the conservatives don't like the compromise, and the liberals don't like the compromise, but it's possible that the moderates and the liberals would come together to endorse this compromise and thereby persecute as many Christian businessmen in America as possible.
Kevin, I want to say something. Senator Jeff Merkley, the Democrat from Oregon, who's the chief sponsor in the Senate of this so-called Equality Act, actually said, look, I've done a lot of town halls and nobody in a town hall has said, and again, he's from Oregon, nobody in a town hall has said, oh my goodness, what's the story with Bostock? Again, that's the Supreme Court decision that came down 6-3 that said a business has no right to fire someone who is a homosexual or transgender and they feel is disruptive to their business. I would say, number one, for the Oregon listeners to Generations, you all need to start showing up at your town hall meetings. Even if it's a Democrat senator like Merkley, he needs to hear from you. And you need to be willing not to be silenced, not to be intimidated, to speak out. And yes, you might be booed at the town hall meeting. They mm-hmm. might call you a hater or a homophobe. The yeah. fact is, we mm-hmm. must speak out. And that's true across the country. When senators and congressmen come back to the district, hold town halls, we really need to hold our nose because it's not always going to be a pleasant experience, and we need to show up and not just be there to witness what's going on and what they're saying, but be willing to write out a question and fill it out on a 3x5 index card if that's how they do it, or step up to the microphone and push back on the hostility to Christianity and Christian values.
I think people need to understand that, the other side has gotten the quote-unquote rights to kill their babies, to engage in every sexual perversion that they can land on, and yet now the goal on the part of the other side is to come after Christians and to subject Christians to a persecution and to take away their rights to do free business, to engage in contracts, to speak, to worship according to their conscience. So these things are being attacked at this point. Now, yeah, the left has gotten their way in terms of mass producing and fast tracking the killing of innocent babies, the engaging in sexual perversion and dragging their sexual perversions into the public schools and teaching our children to engage in these sexual perversions and such. So they've gotten all the way down the track this way. Now they're at the point of subjecting Christians to persecution. So this is the line at which we stand at this point, and it's time for us to do the best we can to defend our freedoms and to defend our rights, our God-given rights, our constitutional rights. And the Apostle Paul did so in Acts chapter 16. He claimed his right as a Roman citizen not to be persecuted for speaking out in Philippi. And we have the right to do the same thing. And we have the obligation to do the same thing. Maybe that's the better way to say it. So, friends, at this point, the argument is whether we're going to be persecuting Christian businessmen, Christian colleges, Christian schools, Christian churches. Where are we going to draw the line? What will be included under the accommodations and employment restrictions applied by the Civil Rights Act of 1964? That's the question that the Supreme Court is grappling with. That's the question that our legislators in Congress are grappling with. What will be included on the accommodations and employment restrictions applied by the Civil Rights Act of 1964? That's the question. It's been applied to race, religion, et cetera, et cetera. But at this point, shall it be applied to homosexuals, transgenders, et cetera, et cetera? And the fundamental question is, should the government have the right to control over what we do with our own property? If people refuse to sell apples to people with any belly buttons, of course, they do themselves a disservice and will put themselves out of business. You know, if you're just stupid enough to not do business with people with any belly buttons, then you're doing yourself a disservice and you're going to put yourself out of business. Now, I believe that privately owned homosexual hotels should have the right to refuse service to me or to people with any belly buttons. and I don't think that they should be fined by the government for doing so. I believe that privately owned homosexual businesses like print shops and flower shops and bakeries should be able to refuse service to people like me, even if I'm in the minority, and they should not be fined or imprisoned by the government for doing so. Right. See, that's because I believe in liberty.
Exactly.
I believe that there are limits to which the civil government cannot impose certain moral standards on others. The jurisdictional boundaries of the civil magistrate is limited by God's laws. And I believe private governments or private businesses should be able to lay me off if I refuse to work on Sundays, for example. Now, I don't believe it'd be ethical or kind or nice to treat me that way. So, I wouldn't want this flower shop to treat me that way. That's not nice. You know, if they're treating me poorly, if a company is firing me for not working on Sunday because I'm a Christian, I think that's just unkind. I think that's not nice. That's immoral. They shouldn't do that. But I don't think the government should come down on them and fine them and imprison them for doing these kinds of things. By the way, Frito-Lay has agreed to pay about $50,000 to settle a lawsuit filed by the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission. Apparently, what happened was this guy, the Seventh-day Adventist, would not work on Saturday or would go to Saturday trainings because of his Seventh-day Adventist religious beliefs. And the company has agreed to pay this guy $50,000 to settle a lawsuit on the basis of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. As part of the consent decree, also, the company is providing the HR managers and employees training that covers the reasonable accommodation process. And so, but this is dangerous. This is wrong from my perspective. I think this is wrong. This is more regulation of private business. And this sets us up for even more regulation of private businesses. It won't put a transgender man as a receptionist at the front of the store or what have you. So this is just dangerous to do this kind of thing. Why? Because this violates a man's right to do what he will with his own property. He has a right to determine whether or not he's going to hire or fire this guy or that guy on this basis or that basis. Why? Because this money, the investment he's put into the business belongs to him, and he has the right to decide what to do with his own property. So that's a basic biblical principle based on the Eighth Commandment. This guy owns this means of exchange, and he has the right to do what he will with what he has. Now, that doesn't mean that he has the right to come out and kick sand in my shoes or, you know, break my arms or back over my dog in the driveway, or, you know, he doesn't have the right to do this kind of thing, but he has the right to do what he will with his own business. And so again, I take that position that Frito-Lay should not have to pay $50,000 for some Seventh-day Adventist guy who doesn't want to go to training on a Saturday, because this sets us up for more regulation of private businesses who won't put a transgender man as a receptionist in the front of the funeral home. So that's the principle involved here.
I have just finished reading a powerful book by Dr. Erwin Lutzer, the pastor emeritus at Moody Church in Chicago, Illinois. It's called We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. And he notes a story told by George Orwell. to underscore how serious our situation today is in America, especially in light of this so-called Equality Act. Orwell played a rather dirty trick on a wasp. The wasp came onto his plate as he was picnicking outside to eat some of his jam. Orwell cut the wasp in half with his knife. The wasp continued to eat the jam. Only when the wasp tried to fly away did it understand how serious its situation really was. And Erwin Lutzer says the political, the moral situation today in America is far more serious than many of us realize. And as we were talking about this whole homosexual agenda, he cited the fact that homosexual activists in America literally learned propaganda techniques from Adolf Hitler himself. You vilify anyone who does not agree with you, and you have two arsenals that are especially important. The first arsenal is hate. Hitler said it was very important for the nation to hate. Hate is stronger than simple dislike. Hitler hated the Jews, got the country to hate the Jews. And in our day, the secular left hates conservative Christians. The second arsenal is to make sure that people fear stepping out of line. So you give unreasonable punishment to keep everyone in lockstep. You do the cancel culture, big tech, and shut people down and suspend accounts. And to another final point, he talked about a preacher who preached a message in October of 2019 in Missouri on Genesis 1:27, a whole series on sexuality, underscoring that God only created two genders. By the next day, that pastor was vilified on social media. It was the front page of the newspaper. And he said, look, pastors, you need to lovingly preach the truth. Yes, you will be vilified, but we must speak. We cannot and should not be shamed into silence. When we receive criticism, we remember what Jesus said, blessed are you if men revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my name's sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad. And I think it's interesting to note that today, by and large, we do have freedom of religion. But for many centuries, the church did not have freedom of religion. Just ask the martyrs. It was George Orwell who said, the further a society falls from the truth, the more it will hate those who speak it. And I think we've got some lessons to be gleaned from what Erwin Lutzer has said in his book, We Will Not Be Silenced.
Well, let's focus in on the Equality Act. It appears that once government has control over who you hire and who you do business with, now the question is, how far does it go? Governments are asking the question, do we include homosexuals in this Civil Rights Act of 1964, along with the Seventh-day Adventists and the minorities? Do we force homosexuals into every club, every church? Homosexuality, of course, is somewhat different than skin color, even religious ideologies and such. But moral choices relating to what you do with your private organs are not the same thing as skin pigment, something we need to keep reminding folks of. But if homosexuals are included in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and that appears to be what the U.S. Supreme Court has insisted upon, and the legislatures are insisting upon, so now, where do you draw the line? And this is the question that is before the Supreme Court. This is the question before the legislatures. Do we draw the line where private persons are required to provide services for homosexual weddings? How about hotels and rentals that don't want to allow for polyamorous parties and homosexual couples and such? Or churches that accommodate weddings? They hold the weddings in the sanctuaries. You know, that's not exactly Sunday worship there. It sounds more like a everyday kind of accommodation. They may not be forced to include homosexuals in their membership in the church, but why shouldn't they be forced to accommodate homosexual weddings in their sanctuary? So those are the sorts of questions that the Supreme Court is going to be dealing with here in the next year or two. And how about private Christian schools and colleges as accommodation industries? Academics and secular knowledge built up on human reason is supposed to be separated from the knowledge that comes from sacred doctrine. So remember, that's the whole point of Christian colleges. That's the point that they've been arguing for since Aquinas 800 years ago, that somehow the college, the Christian college, the university is involved in the business of human knowledge built up on human reason. And therefore, here's what the U.S. Supreme Court's going to fall down on. They will be considered as accommodation industries. Also, given the fact that 99% of colleges and universities are tied into Pell Grants, it's doubtful they're going to remain independent of federal regulations via Title IX and such. Right. So we've talked about all these things over the years. But here's my point. I think we need to continue to shift our college academic focus towards a discipleship focus. The ministry of discipleship with young people is directly under the family and the church. We may have some preservation of liberty, but private Christian colleges will have to transgender their bathrooms and dorms because they're not churches, and they've been selling themselves out to Title IX funding for the last 40 years.
Now it's coming back
to
bite them.
So where are we right now? Where we are right now is that God is preserving two things, and we're thankful for that. He's preserving homeschooling and Christian churches. But at the same time, we need to do a full court press on this thing and try to exempt the Jack Phillips, the Christian businesses, and Christian colleges as best as we possibly can. So I guess my question is, will Christians be arrested? If you're in the hotel industry, the rental industry, the photography business, the wedding cake business, and you're uncomfortable providing support for homosexual pagan services, you could be very well fined or arrested under the Equality Act or the Fairness for All Act as well.
Crazy.
You're uncomfortable with a transgender person working the front desk in your dental office, and you try to fire them or move them somewhere else in the business, you're going to be fined, arrested, perhaps put in prison. Mm. If you're a doctor focused on cosmetic surgery or gynecology, you may be forced into transgendered surgeries.
Yikes.
So just remember this, that we're at the point of persecution upon some segment of the American Christian population. That's where we are right now. Now, granted, these are fairly narrow areas of interest, but my guess is most Christian-owned hotels, apartment buildings, etc., would try to maintain a don't ask, don't tell policy. I'm guessing that's what's going to happen, but Christians should set their sights on shutting down the whole regulative area of life as far as the government is concerned. This, I think, is where Christians need to go. They need to say government regulation needs to get out of the business of regulating, firing, and hiring in private businesses. There shouldn't be any government regulation of hotels and rentals. Just unjust. It's socialism. It's fascism. It's government control over the private industry. And when you tell a guy who he can fire and hire, whether it's a Seventh-day Adventist or a transgender guy, you're stealing his property and taking control of it. And I'm saying get out of that business. I'd say also the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution is still strong. We're thankful for that. That may hang in there for a little bit longer. But Christians will be more affected by the cancel culture and the corporate jobs and the internet. I can see homeschooling and church and 99% of home businesses free from constraints placed on them by the evil Borg. But at the same time, the corporate arena, as well as in many Christian-owned hotels, businesses, et cetera, they're going to take it in the gut. In the meantime, friends, I just want to wrap it up this way. Let's make sure everybody understands that as we do our best to resist the idea of supporting and celebrating homosexual weddings and all the rest, Let's remind everybody that nobody gets to exempt themselves from the grace of God to set them free from their sins. And this is the main issue. Beyond anything else, this is the main issue. And this will be why we will be persecuted. And that is that we will tell our friends who are committed to the sin of homosexuality, incest, whatever it is, we're going to just tell them, hey, Jesus Christ came to save us from these sins. And we are not going to equivocate. We're not going to redefine sin to eliminate your particularly favorite sin. We're not going to exempt you from the grace of God. Jesus came to save us from sins, including the sin of sexual perversion. And even those sins we're addicted to, those sins that we are somehow biologically, chemically attracted to some particular sin, whether it's alcoholism or homosexuality or what have it. Sometimes guys are, you know, somehow chemically attracted to pornography and self-stimulation and such. And we're just saying Jesus came to save us from all of these sins. Doesn't matter how addicted you are, how chemically attracted you are, or how biologically leaning you are towards some particular sin, Jesus came to save us from all of these sins. Now, granted, if they don't want to be set free from their sins of homosexuality or adultery or porn or alcoholism or what have you, you can't force them to be freed from these things. Jesus told the Jews who would not believe in him, he said, I say to you that you will die in your sins if you do not believe that I am he. You will die in your sins. If you abide in my word, you're my disciples indeed. You shall know the truth. The truth shall set you free. They answered him, we're Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free? Jesus said, most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. That doesn't matter if you're a homosexual or a fornicator or a liar or addicted to pornography or alcohol or what have you. Whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. And that, my friends, is the bottom line. Jesus Christ came to set us free from sins. And all of these efforts on the part of the U.S. Supreme Court, on the part of Christian church denominations to excuse the sin of homosexuality or the sin of divorce or the sin of anything else, they're just trying to justify their sins. And it's a form of hypocrisy, of Pharisaism, of self-righteousness, an unwillingness to fall down before Jesus and say, Jesus, have mercy on me, a sinner. I know that you can set me free from this sin too, because you died to set me free. Friends, we need to lift up the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ and not allow for any of this blasphemous undermining of the full-orbed power of the grace of God to set homosexuals free and all the rest of us free from our sins. Let's accentuate the gospel of Jesus Christ as we defend the law of God and as we defend the grace of God in setting us free from these sins. I need to wrap things up there, friends. We have been going over this particular issue, but it's not just a political issue. It is a spiritual issue. It is a gospel issue. And we're going to leave it right there on this edition of the Generations Broadcast. And as we wrap up this edition of the Generations Broadcast, friends, I'd encourage you to The Story of Freedom, which deals with this particular battle for liberty, which is waging hot in the 21st century. I deal with that, but I also deal with the 800-year legacy of Christian liberty that came through the amazing, faithful work of so many Christians over so many generations. The legacy of liberty is something that we need to preserve in this generation. Read the story. The Story of Liberty in our little book, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.